It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 25th day of May, 2021. This is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. That's also where you go if you'd like to be, well, to enhance your live listening experience. Sorry, there's not a lot of hangout during the podcast, but everybody listens to the podcast at a different time. That makes it a little difficult. But if you're listening live and you'd like to augment your listening experience, well, just beep up on over to Headon.live and click on the chat room and jump right in. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. You'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Jeremy in Vermont and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave, and he is capably assisted by longtime pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Hail, hail, the gang's all here. Yes, indeed. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Remember, that's the day when we celebrate Titanic manifestations of what passes for right wing intellect, and we got one right off jump. I'm just so happy. Oh, this is just good. And we'll get to that in fairly short order. Every program at the Horn begins with gratitude, and so thanks go out to our 25th day, 25th day of the month subscribers. And what that means is we say thank you this Titanic Tuesday to Mark. Thank you, Mark, and thank you to Peter. Thanks as well to Mark. Thanks so much to... let's see if I can... well, thanks to moviegoers. We'll use that. Thank you. And thank you to Barbara. Thank you so very much. And as promised last night, I said I would mention if the overnight crew knocked out the fundraising, knocked out the remainder of Charlene's challenge, namely Charlene and Rogue's Island's challenge yesterday, and that is in fact what happened, because moviegoers and Barbara and David all jumped in to make sure that that happened. Thank you so very much indeed. So that challenge got met, and that's wonderful, and that actually takes the fundraising hole down under the $1,000 mark. Yay! It takes it down to well, let's see here. Carry the 12. It's something like $750. So that's really helpful. Thank you so very much indeed. To everybody who did that, thank you, and thank you to Charlene as well. Thanks for being such a pillar of support for the little Horn Family Community Congregation. I can never adequately thank all of you enough. I can't. So it is Titanic Tuesday. You know, full speed ahead into that iceberg in our little small government conservative dinghy. Dinghy indeed, yeah. And we'll get things started the way things should start and have started for quite some time now. And by that, I mean, Robin, today's date, writes Joey, the 25th of May, 2021. Oh, and thank you, Jeremy in Vermont. Let's call it 7:40. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Yes, writes Joey, today's date is just full of history and interesting events, of course, with the most poignant being this being the first anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. And I'll interject here editorially that, you know, when I wake up in the morning, you know, I'm kind of, you know, and, you know, and I didn't get my morning cup of decaf because I had to go off for blood work because, you know, transness is so much fun. Don't turn off the radio. I just said transness. That's all. So I had blood work. So that meant I had to be nihil peros, nothing by mouth from like 11 o'clock last night. And so I was cranky. And I'm on my way over to Beckley to get my blood drawn. And I'm listening to National Petroleum Radio. And it's morning edition. And I keep hearing how George Floyd died. Or George Floyd was killed. You know, if somebody gets run over by a runaway, oh, I don't know, Oscar Mayer weenie mobile, they were killed. And if someone just happens to be, sitting in the stands at a ballpark and, you know, boom, heart attack, they died. And it just crawled all over me. Because I understand journalism weasel speak. And it's weasel speak largely because of the pettifogging lawyers up in the upper echelons of journalism organizations. And make no mistake, even though it's so supposedly public radio, don't think there aren't a vast army of pettifogging lawyers out there worrying about liability issues. But damn. We've had a trial of Derek Chauvin. We've had jury deliberation of the facts adduced at the trial of Derek Chauvin. And that jury, tried and true, heard the evidence, found the facts as juries will, and came back and said, hey, y'all, although they don't really say y'all in Minnesota, I only, hey, you guys, I don't know. Maybe Jessica can help with that. But they said, hey. Derek Chauvin murdered. Shakespeare spelled it M-U-R-T-H-E-R, but I think it still gets pronounced murder, you know, as in heady murder. Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd. And I kept listening, and I kept listening. I kept hearing about how George Floyd died. And I kept hearing about how George Floyd was killed. Run over by a Krispy Kreme bus. I don't know. And it just pissed me off. So, there we go. The pettifoggers, maybe before the trial, might have been kind of halfway right. You know, Derek Chauvin allegedly killed it. But there's a jury verdict, and the fact that the dude is going to appeal, the homicidal maniac, doesn't change the fact of what the jury found, and that means it's okay to say George Floyd was murdered by the cop Derek Chauvin. It's a fact. It is a fact established by a jury. But no, I guess the pettifogging lawyers at NPR and Maybe they were worried about the delicate sensibilities. Yeah, too sensitive of the listening audience. But in my book, you use the word murder. If you're talking about, I mean, Jesus Christ, if you were talking about Emmett Till, would you say that Emmett Till passed away? I mean, it would be fine by me if you said, that if we said that George Floyd was lynched by a cop because he was. Oh, but the poor, delicate little snowflake white people might get us sad and get all triggered and need their safe space. But he was murdered. And I think going forward that there needs to be some sort of an amendment to the whatever style manual that NPR and other journalism rackets use, where the first reference to a person who has been determined to have been murdered is that they were murdered. And then you can use died. And then you can use was killed, passive voice. How does that ever get into any kind of decent writing? Or you could use passed away. The lawyers in the crowd might want to also use the will matured. Hey, I hate soppy weasel language. But anyway, I'm walking. Well, thank you. Megan points out, hi. I used to work at a newspaper. You're absolutely right. Once the courts come down with a decision, it's okay to state the crime. The only time you say alleged is when an arrest has been made, but it hasn't gone to court yet. Yes, that's the absolutely. For I, too, was once an eager young journalist. But, Joey, I apologize. I didn't mean to walk all over your journal. Let me get back to that. I just cannot wait to see the other three officers convicted and hopefully spend ample time in prison. Jeffrey and I just find it very interesting that two of the other three cops were minorities, black and the other of Asian descent. I think this is brought. I hope this is brought out in the trial, and somebody questions these two former cops, especially the black one, as to how he could assist in the killing of a member of his own ethnic group. As a note, Joey uses the word race here. Race is not a real term. Race, and I'm not being corrective, but I'm just pointing out, race is a construct that was invented by white European colonialists to explain away and excuse their own mistreatment of other human beings. There's no such thing as race. There are ethnicities, and ethnicity is just different flavors of Homo sapiens based upon this or that or the other genetic factor. I'm just defining on the fly. But ethnicity. I really try to avoid the word race because it's bullshit. Unless you're talking about a racist or racism. Joey continues and says, I'd love to hear the explanation to that one. Jeffrey has raced into the conversation about the racist cops. Yes, I, as a giraffe, know the code of the jungle, and you always protect your own species at all cost. What kind of an animal was the black cop not to make an effort to stop the murder of his own ethnicity, a member of his own ethnicity? Maybe we will find out in the trial this summer. On this day in 1787, the Constitutional Convention began at the Pennsylvania State House. We call it Independence Hall in Philadelphia. After enough delegates had shown up for a, wait for it. Yes, it started after enough delegates had shown up for a quarrel. That's what it sounds like when a giraffe lands. Yeah, a quarrel, not a quorum. I see what he did there. I'm walking all over the journal this morning, this afternoon, this evening, whatever. I'm walking all over the journal because, among other things, Madison admitted it. They called that thing together knowing that what they were doing was absolutely illegal under the Articles of Confederation. And so the Constitutional Convention was really kind of a coup. And it provides us with a template for how sideways things can go if you call a Constitutional Convention. Which is why the Lulus and madcaps who want an Article 5 Constitutional Convention, at least the ones on our side, are badly benighted and at worst, simpletons who are trusting of the motives of the right wing. Oh, we just want a balanced budget amendment. You don't even trust Jesus. That's not even a good idea. But anyway, Joey corrects Giraffrey. Jeffrey, I think you mean the convention convened when enough delegates showed up for a quorum. Well, yes, they had a quarrel before the quorum, and then they quarreled after the quorum. It was a titanic struggle. Don't argue with the giraffe, Joey. Just don't. And yesterday was the anniversary of the first night game in baseball as the Cincinnati Reds hosted the Philadelphia Phillies at Crosley Field in 1935. And Jeffrey wants to shed some light on the matter. Yes, FDR actually from the White House pressed a gold telegraph key, and from 500 miles away an electric pulse was relayed to a signal lamp on a table near the first base at Crosley Field. Standing at the table, Reds general manager Larry McPhail, generally credited with being the father of night baseball, flipped the ceremonial switch at 8:30, thus allowing 632 Mazda lamps to illuminate the field for the first time. And that's not the Mazda, no. No, that's not Mazda, the Japanese car company. That's Mazda being a take on the old Persian god from Zoroastrianism, Ahura Mazda. Mazda, I think, I can stay, I don't know. But Ahura Mazda meaning the sacred or holy light. Okay. For a city that I would not consider very progressive by any means, as the city seems to close up the bars and nightlife earlier every night than most cities, this was a very progressive move for that time period. I do believe if the lights had not gone on, this would have been a huge McFailure for Larry McPhail. Oh, dude, what are we going to do with this giraffe? One day in 1935, this day, May 25th, Babe Ruth hit his final three home runs in Pittsburgh before a jeering crowd that believed he was all washed up. Literally, both of the Babe's daughters were in attendance and were photographed sticking their tongues out at the jeering hecklers. Babe showed them that day, but the Babe would never play under the lights or in the limelight anymore, as he would retire 5 days later. When he passed away, a brilliant poem was written. I can't remember who wrote it. The title of it was Game Called. Jeffrey has a turn at bat. Henry Aaron would leave the Braves franchise in Atlanta to finish his career back on the former hometown of the team in Milwaukee. On the other hand, Babe Ruth would go to play for the Braves when the franchise was still in Boston, where he began his career and finished his career as a Brave. By the way, when are the Braves going to change their name, much like the Redskins are in the process of doing? We call them the Washington Football Club, Giraffe. And the Cleveland Indians will officially have a new name next year, and I think they should call the team the Cleveland Clinic. Singular, you know, like the Miami Heat or the Chicago Fire from the old USFL League. I think the team being renamed the Cleveland Clinic would honor a great institution in Cleveland. They bought my dad 10 extra years of life. And make for great advertising for the hospitals. I realize there might be a problem with the pitchers being accused of doctoring up the baseball. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, that's... Went a long way for that line. But I still think it's a great potential name for the Cleveland baseball team. Good job, Giraffe. Well done. It was this day, 1964, the Supreme Court in Griffin versus County School Board of Prince Edward County ordered the Virginia County to reopen its public schools, which officials had closed in an attempt to circumvent the Supreme Court's 1954 Brown v. Board of Education desegregation ruling that we discussed last week. And on this day in 1979, in the worst airline disaster in the history of this country, 273 people died when an American DC-10 crashed after its left engine fell off during takeoff. 20 years later, Joey says, I flew in nearly the exact same plane, which in 1999 was called an L-1011, from Cleveland to Chicago O'Hare. I was originally supposed to be in a very small jet on that flight, but they needed to get the big jet over to Chicago for a flight the next day. There were only about 20 of us on that flight, so the airlines put us all in first class, and after I very loudly made the point that this very same plane crashed 20 years ago, amazingly, we were given as many free cocktails as we wished. I personally had 2 Long Island iced teas. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 25th day of May, with Giraffe not letting you forget that quorum starts with a, oh dear, Q. And there's a $10 take the Q out of quorum challenge. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Giraffe. That was a heck of a journal. A couple of nice departure points. Yeah, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it indeed. Serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Baseball Trivia Department, Steve in New York says, Game Called. Looks like it was the revised version of the poem that was original in 1910. And by the way, with the news that the remainder of her challenge was met, Charlene just made a note, sent a note saying, "Phew." I share your sentiment, Charlene. Thank you so much. Oh, I know, I know, I know. And no worries, Charlene. At your leisure. Buddy John in PA says, "But Robin, the leader of BLM is a self-proclaimed Marxist. Hey, Bruga Bruga, Marxism. Hey, hide your daughters." Oh, God. I know, I know. Going back to the journalism, my little mini journalism rant inside the Joey's Journal, Steve says, "You're giving them too much credit. My experience is that so-called journalists are generally not that bright." A harsh assessment, yes, but my experience. "My money is on journalists themselves not knowing which terms to use. The most poignant example, other than the murder versus killing versus passed away situation, is journalists using the term full faith and credit to refer to the budget deficits, public securities, when full faith and credit is about the Constitution requiring states to recognize the public acts of each other." Well, there's my personal favorite along those lines, Steve, is when some practitioner of the art of the ink-stained wretch says, following a jury verdict that results in an acquittal, see how I'm talking? That the defendant was found innocent. There is not a single jurisdiction in all the many petty kingdoms, petty fiefdoms that are the United States, in which a defendant may be found, not even Louisiana Stan, which operates nominally on the Napoleonic Code and not on good old solid John Bull Anglo-American jurisprudence. Nobody gets found innocent. And it drives me nuts, and I used to complain about it all the time because, you know, this is that kind of girl. Somebody finally took the time to explain it to me and told me I was absolutely correct. Well, I knew that. But explained to me why, and that's why I referenced the pettifogging lawyers in the legal department. It was explained to me that reporters will write the phrase or voice the phrase "found innocent" because, and I would never want to be a newspaper lawyer or any kind of corporate risk management person. I don't think I'd get a wink of sleep because you are paid to worry about shit that might happen all the time, and that's worse than even ordinary lawyering. Because a risk management lawyer or a corporate newspaper lawyer is just sitting there waiting for the call about the lawsuit from some journalist screwing up. And in this particular case, that was exactly what was going on. The word had come from on high that reporters were not to say that anyone was found not guilty, because the lawyers were scared to death that somebody somewhere in the process would forget the not part and it would just say guilty, and the next thing you know, somebody's writing a check for a libel case. No kidding. So the workaround was to say was found innocent. Somebody told me once, I have no verification, this is just idle gossip, but I was informed that it is possible in Scotland, of all places, to be found either guilty, not guilty, or innocent. Yeah, right. But this ain't as Professor, Doctor, Secretary, Senator Clinton once remarked, when she told Bernie, "This ain't Denmark, this also ain't Scotland." Oh, and from the Corrections Department, Steve in New York says, oh, dear, dear Giraffe, the L-1011 is not the same as the DC-10. Lockheed manufactured the L-1011 TriStar. They no longer make it. McDonnell Douglas, formerly Douglas, manufactured the DC-10. After the merger and the formation of the new company, McDonnell Douglas, they manufacture the successor to the DC-10, which is the MD-11. But the funny thing is, there was a horrible crash of a DC-10, and there was also a horrible crash of an L-1011. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Let's see. A game called... There it is. When Babe Ruth died, and Grantland Rice, wrote both poems. He wrote one in 1910. He wrote the original version in 1910, and he updated it with the death of Babe Ruth. It was once said that Grantland Rice was the only journalist in America who was allowed to send poetry via the telegraph because telegraphy was expensive. Game called by darkness, let the curtain fall. No more remembered thunder sweeps the field. No more the ancient echoes hear the call to one who wore so well both sword and shield. The big guys left us with the night to face, and there's no one who can take his place. Game called, and silence settles on the plain. Where is the crash of ash against the sphere? Where is the mighty music, the refrain that once brought joy to every waiting ear? The big guys left us lonely in the dark, forever waiting for the flaming spark. Game called! What more is there for us to say? How dull and drab the field looks to the eye for one who ruled it in a golden day, has waved his cap to bid us all goodbye. The big guy's gone. By land or sea or foam, may the great umpire call him safe at home. I love the little stream of consciousness things that happen in this program. Thanks for digging that out like a hastily thrown ball in the dirt to first base, Steve. Thank you. My co-host today, Jeremy says, where's your co-host today? I can't hear him smacking at the studio door crying to be let in. What have you done to him? Maybe he's hunting Sammy the studio snake elsewhere in the mansion, but wouldn't he be better served hunting mice in the Gulfstream 5 hangar instead? Well, the great big dumpster got hauled away today with a whole bunch of detritus. And I was poking, and sure enough, as soon as the hydraulic winch started, zit, he shot out from under the dumpster, and I think he's probably maybe under the outbuilding. What the fuck was that? Well, he even sounds a little bit like Sylvester. But he's fine, and I apparently otherwise engaged today. I'm sure he'll be back. Wow. Yeah. So it was a busy day in Mount Colby gone. I had to go and get blood work done. And I'm cranky when I don't get to have anything, but it works out that way. And so I go over to get my blood drawn, and we're checking for kidney function, liver function, pancreas function, A1C, lipids, triglycerides, hormone levels. And, I didn't glam it up or anything. Good God, it was 7 o'clock in the morning. But I drove over to Beckley. And, I had a whole complicated Rachel Maddow-esque lead into all of this, but I'm gonna skip it because there's other stuff to get into. Because we got a Titanic Tuesday nominee that just won't quit. I mean, literally won't quit. But so I got there and I checked in, And then I noticed that, well, I didn't know, Agnes called, and I didn't want to stand there in the lobby and take the call from Agnes. And so there was the little lab waiting room was full, and there was this older, lack of a better term, hillbilly couple seated just outside the door. And please don't tune away, because this is funny. I mean, this isn't like Jeb Bush saying, please clap. And no, we weren't checking for that. No need. But as I walked past, and, well, my walk's changed a little bit. Because I'm no longer self-policing. I'm living authentically. And I had on a little hiking skirt and a, just a little nothing t-shirt, sleeveless top. But I was, I'm living full-time. Not hiding anymore. And this was an older couple. I'd guess they had to at least be in their late 60s, early 70s. I feel weirder about saying older couple the older I get, because they're not, they couldn't have been that much older than me, but they were by maybe a couple of decades. And as I walked past, the old hillbilly lady, I'm using the term lady as a matter of some degree of gentility, but as I walk past, and honest to God, I promise, I was not sashaying. I wasn't even swanning. It wasn't even Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality saying, yeah, we're gliding here. No, I was just walking past, and my God, the old hillbilly woman says in a stage whisper that you could hear on Mars, she says, them spike boobs. You know, you gotta have a sense of humor about this shit. Because you can't just live in a state of perpetual offendedness. But to me, it sounded like she, because it was them spike boobs. And yes, she said thems. And I was a little taken aback. And I got a few feet past, because, you know, when you're walking on air because you're living your authentic life and you're happy everywhere you go, it takes a little bit to come screeching onto the ground, and, you know, it's, you smoke some of the treads off your keds. And I turned, because I couldn't quite believe what I'd just heard, but I knew what I'd heard. Them spike boobs! And I turned and I said, beg your pardon? And then, you know, think quick, rabbit. I went down into this voice. My years and years and years baritone broadcast boy voice that I struggle with on this program. And I said, why, yes, ma'am, in fact, they are, bless your heart. But I'm a-growing my own as quick as I can. And I turned around and walked out the door and made my call, told Agnes about it. I got so much to learn, because this is the punchline. I thought my response was clever. But Agnes explained to me that I had just missed a great moment of affirmation. And what Agnes explained to me, you dumb old girl. Because it's a Beverly Hillbillies line, dumb old girl cousin. She was treating you like a woman. I was like, what? Yeah. She didn't see you as a guy. And I said, what in the world are you talking about? And she said, her old man, she caught her old man staring at your tits. And that's why she said, them's fake boobs. And it was going to be bad enough for him when they got home, as it was. Now it's going to be 10 times worse because you turned around and confirmed to him that they were looking at a guy. Or not a guy. And I was floored. And it... So I've been walking around the rest of the day. Them fake boobs! Oh, yeah. So I just had to share that. These little grace notes, I mean, even when they're ugly and spiteful, they turn out to be grace notes, and it's lovely. And I'm not laughing at her, I don't think. But it was really, because I was flabbergasted. But I'm okay. I'm okay now, but I had to share that story with y'all. Because never in 58 years has anybody ever looked at me and said, them's fake boobs! And by the way, I'm saying B-double-O-B-S. That is a definite Southern West Virginia pronunciation. Babes! Because we do funny things with the vowel O here. Like, we don't say home, we say home. Right. Matt in San Francisco says, not the same, but I'm known as an SLW when in my drag. SLW standing for... Wait a minute. Oh, my God, Matt. Suspiciously large woman. I'll be okay in a minute. I'm sorry. I don't. Thank God Agnes isn't back here. Oh, come on, Robin. Matt, that just wasn't fair. And Matt, in conclusion, Matt says, sachet chante. And that happened the other day.
Two.
I walked into the... And, you know, like I said, I can't be... Well, yes, I am the SLW. I think I'm going to get that tattooed on my forehead, Matt. Oh, God. You got to do all these. And part of the reason I talk about this, and I'm hoping it doesn't creep people out. One of the things I found out in the wider world, and God, we've got Titanic intellect to get into, but... And just trying to learn, there's a lot of curiosity about people like me. Some of it's kind of morbid. Some of it is legitimate and genuine. And for those people with genuine questions, I want to offer up genuine answers. Because one of the things that I absolutely feel an obligation, a moral duty to do, is to counterbalance the brooga 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 that's out there in such volume from these pathetic, hate-filled ignoramuses of the transphobic white wing. Last week, I had to go for my first psychiatrist appointment because I have to have gatekeeper letters in order to keep doing what I'm doing. There are endless flaming barbed wire hoops to jump through. And no, we didn't sit down and talk about, you know, why I hated my father or any of that garden variety gobbledygook. And we did not prescribe me any mood-altering medications. I'm on the best mood-altering medication of my entire life in the form of estrogen. But as I was sitting in the waiting room, the doc was a little late. It was telemedicine, but I had to go there. I don't have to go there anymore. You can just do it, you know, from the studio here or whatever. But that first visit, I had to go there, and so I'm sitting in the waiting room with this sweet woman, and my heart just went out to her because it was obvious that she was struggling with something. And I heard somebody poke their head out the door and say, "You here?" And call her by name and say, "You here for your shot?" She said, "Mm-hmm." And she was just constantly rubbing one hand over the other, and when she would stop for a minute, her hands were shaking horribly. I was heartbroken. Because that's all over the place in Appalachia. And she began to make conversation. And she asked me about my hair, and she said, "Your hair is just beautiful." And I said, "Well, thank you." And she said, I love how you've done it. Thank you." And I complimented her dress. And again, I'll refer to one of the most profound lines from the end of Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises, where Lady Brett Ashley says, "You know, not being a bitch is what we have instead of God." That's another one to get tattooed. And we went on, and we talked some more, and she said, "Well, I just have to tell you, you're beautiful." Ooh, am I not ready for that? I've gotten a few of those, and it's surprising, and it's sweet, and it's affirming, and it feels wonderful. But it's still kind of, and I look around, and who's she talking to? And I said, "Thank you." And she followed up and said, "You're a really tall woman." And my inner monologue, for once in my life, mercifully did not get loose. And I didn't say, "Oh, you have no idea." And we just went on chatting until she was called back, and eventually I was called back. She wasn't there when I got out, but those moments are going to happen. I mean, that was really kind of the end of it, you know, because I went out and made my call. Agnes and I talked. I went back in. They weren't in those chairs anymore. They had moved into the lab. They'd moved into the lab waiting room. And because Suman just said, and congratulations to Suman. Suman had a victory. And I'm so proud. I'm so proud and happy when members of our community share the good things that happened to them. Suman said, "I won, get this, the Arizona Humorous Toastmasters speech competition." No, I'm not emailing you just to brag. Well, you're not bragging, Suman. You're sharing happy news with your community. "My speech is about how the idioms of the English language confused the heck out of me when I first heard them. I know you're a master of the art of word knowing, so I figured you might enjoy it. It's on YouTube. And if Suman writes and gives us permission, maybe later in the program I'll cue it up and we'll see what I'd like to, because the email came in and I didn't have a chance to listen earlier, and we can all listen to it together for the first time. So congratulations, Suman. Thank you. But Suman adds, "What happened afterwards? You left me hanging. What did the woman say after you told her you were growing your own? I'm curious how low her jaw dropped." or jowl, as the case may be.
Bitchy.
Because, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be better. I'm channeling away my inner cattiness. I don't know, but once Agnes explained it to me, it all made sense. And I do know that they didn't have anything to say, and they both looked at the floor the entire time after I had walked back into the lab space. And Steve in New York, by the way, says, Suman, sometimes it's okay to brag, especially among family, because it's not bragging. It's giving us an opportunity to share your happiness and share your joy and take pride in the success of a member of our family. You're absolutely right, Steve. Oh, and more good news from the family. I had a message from Tracy earlier today. And the first thing she said, oh, my God, we've had a medical emergency on my flight. She was flying to Arizona. And is everybody okay? She said, somebody had a seizure on the plane. I said, are they diverting it? She said, no, we're going to go on to Phoenix. So I was relieved. But then I got a text a little bit later from her. And Tracy said, because they were stopping in Phoenix to pick up another flight, and she said, please announce this to the Horn family. I'm on a plane on the way to the ATL, and your girl got A's in all five of her motherfucking classes. 4.0 GP fucking A, y'all. I am so proud for Tracy. Thank you. Oh, my God. All the hard work that went into that. Oh, that's magnificent news. Okay, Steve. Okay, I get it, but still, I just feel the caveat there. So, yeah. Going all the way back to to SLW, them's ass, Steve in New York. I am a person who has significant parts of my family who are the salt of the earth. The proper grammar is not them's fake boobs. It's them's is fake boobs. Well, maybe they're not hillbillies. Lee in New York, them's fake boobs. Give yourself a cowbell for taking her down a notch by taking your voice down a notch. Still funny, my dear. I take them where I get them. Thank you. And Megan says, Robin, Agnes was right. Welcome to the sisterhood. Thank you, Megan. Thank you. Yes, I very definitely am Ralph's in SLW. Yeah, 6 feet two. It's going to suspiciously large. Jeremy wants to know, so did the old dude get clocked by his wife who knows what she would buy her foot, not buy her for not clocking you until you spoke down to them, per se? You know, I love humanity at large. Suspiciously large, as a matter of fact. But that's just mean. Well, that's really kind. I hope that means it was a good thing. Randy Radar says, your announcement of your transness hit a vulnerability at the time within me due to my own past insecurities about my sexual ambiguity and how that ambiguity was used by my adversaries against me. I have since adjusted. I think that's a good thing, Randy. And I'm really happy for you. Living by other people's standards, living by other people's rules impressed upon you, can never be a positive experience relative to our own unique selfness. Lee in New York says, come on, Robin, I didn't hear a cowbell for awesome Tracy. Maybe add three cheers, too. Huzzah! 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 And yeah, damn right a cowbell for a 4.0. And meanwhile, since we're all sharing happy news here, Megan says, first, way to go, Suman and Tracy. Woot! And I applied to be a domestic violence paralegal for the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. Guess who got a call back for an interview today? Yours truly. Send good vibes. It's a great opportunity. Oh, such good vibes, Megan. I'm so happy for you. We're all so happy for you. We share in each other's successes and joys, and we reach out to each other in times of insecurity and anxiety and sadness and fear. Oh, I sure hope you get it. You'd be great at the job. You'd be absolutely wonderful at the job, Megan. And thank you. Ron in Raleigh says, no fake boobs here, just the opposite, from People magazine. Elliot Page beams in shirtless poolside shot, trans BBS first swim trunks. And Ron says, living his authentic life. It is, for no one who's ever needed it, it's astonishing to even ponder, but for somebody who's feeling it for the first time, it really does make you feel like your feet come about six inches off the ground, and you walk on this little cloud of authentic air. Okay. Cowbell for Brother Deacon Asa, old hillbilly couple. That old hillbilly must have been there for an eye exam. And I say that knowing that I'll be dining on a murder hornet in the depths of hell. Sincerely, Brother Deacon Asa, a.k.a. Genghis Khan. Oh, well, it was just a blood work lab. I mean, they didn't have the F. Dagbilik Snickberg Friedrichberg chart on the wall. But I can't believe I got ogled. Okay, and Matt, are there t-shirts out there that just say SLW on the front and on the back, just across the shoulders, suspiciously large woman? Because if there are, I want one. And one other piece of fun news before we get into the madness. It's official now. In celebration of my first Pride Month, which is upcoming, that I'm so excited about, done got my nails did and everything, I'm gonna be cooking at Maggie's Pub in Fayetteville on Saturday, June the 5th. And it was a nice little coinky-dinky, because if we'd been able to have the horn in this year, it would have been on Saturday, June the 5th, because the first Saturday in June is absolutely foolproof for planning outdoor events here in this part of West Virginia, because, yeah, it might sprinkle a little bit in the morning, it might sprinkle a little in the evening, but you're going to have a magnificent, all-day-long, beautiful, even if the clouds up, it's going to be a nice day. And so I selected the date, and on Saturday, June the 5th, starting at, I think, 3 p.m. over at Maggie's in Fayetteville, I'm going to be cooking. And there are going, at the very least, there's going to be hickory smoked pulled pork, and anybody who's been to one of the Malloy getaways, mountain getaways, has had my hickory smoked pulled pork, and I'm gonna do some brisket for the folks who prefer beef. and I'm going to do the batter griddle fried catfish that I've been experimenting with and became very happy with. I'm going to make the magnificent, wonderful hot slaw, and I'm going to make a not hot wimpy variety as well. But the same idea, just without the hot pepper. And then I'm going to make the wonderful, unique tartar sauce for the fish, and I'm going to fire up the acorn and make a ton of biscuits for the fish, and maybe for the barbecue. I don't know. That could be really good. I'm so excited, and there's going to be live music, and then later in the night there's going to be a DJ, and there's going to be karaoke. It's almost going to be like the Hornin would have been. So, and the best part of it all is it's all a fundraiser for Fairness West Virginia and the fantastic work that they do guarding and advancing the rights of the LGBTQQIA+ community. Shucks, I may even hang up my little trans flag there. I really am excited. And so next week's going to be really busy. The smoker's going to be going overtime. Woo! It's going to be fun. And you know what? Something, and I was going to mention this the last time I was talking with Todd, but I don't know. A lot of people, I won't say everybody, but a lot of people like those, you know, those obnoxious pickled smoked sausages. They're usually red and really, you don't read the ingredients label. I got to thinking, I'm going to make my own. Only I'm going to make them with Kaneka. And I'm going to make my vinegar brine, and I'm going to put some little chili tapines in it to make them nice and fiery. Maybe, you know, a couple of cloves of garlic, maybe a little bit of dill, and then water bath can them and everything. And maybe sell those for $1 a piece for people who want to have a, because it goes great with beer. It really does. It goes fantastic with beer. But I'm looking forward to that so much. It's going to be so much fun. And hopefully there will be pictures after. It should be an absolute blast. Well, thank you. Suman says, thanks, Robin, Steve, and community. Sure, cue it up if time permits. I'd love the feedback. I just love it when I hear the words 4.0, 6 months of hard late-night work for one fantastic number. Congratulations to Tracy. Thank you, Suman. Thank you so much. I will tell her. I'm sure she'll be she'll be thrilled when she hears the podcast. Ralph says, I looked on Amazon. I found no SLW shirts or T-shirts. Maybe you or Steve could create some. We need them. I know a T-shirt person over here. That could be a hoot. Yeah. So for a Titanic Tuesday, this has been a surprisingly enjoyable first hour, but you know it's not going to last, right? I mean, it can't. No. Oh, dear God. Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, you're going to receive hate mail, for the funny thing is there was a horrible crash of DC-10, but there was also a horrible crash of an L-1011. Horrible plane crashes ain't funny, Frau Kincaid. True, I stand corrected. I apologize. We have some breaking news as of about 20 minutes ago. Sparky let me know that the Washington Post has revealed that the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., has taken the additional step of actually convening a grand jury in the Trump and Trump Organization criminal probe. Makes me wonder if maybe there's did I miss a Save America PAC pout? Damn it, where'd it go? Oh, there it is. Oh, Oh, he's been going at it all day. Today, as of, let's see a timestamp.
Now everybody is agreeing that I was right when I very early on called Wuhan as the source of COVID-19, sometimes referred to as the China virus. To me, it was obvious from the beginning, but I was badly criticized as usual. Now they're all saying, he was right. Thank you. Nobody's saying he was right. Everybody knew it originated in Wuhan. The thing is, the decent people understood that that was no reason to turn it into a fucking racist meme!
And just by way of explanation of some of what I was talking about last night, I had a really, really good comment from Reverbo earlier in the day. And he makes good points, saying, why is it so outlandish to consider that the Chinese may have been trying to develop a bioweapon like COVID and that it did get loose from the lab, despite public pronouncements to the contrary? We know the U.S., the Russians, and probably a dozen other countries have weapons programs like this, and controlling this shit poses grave risks. While there's no proof, why reject such a possible cause? I don't think it's just some right-wing distraction. If there hasn't been an accident or deliberate deployment of these kinds of weapons yet, it will surely happen somewhere, and nobody may take direct responsibility for it. Why artificially create COVID when it isn't that lethal? Hard to say unless it was a step towards something worse. It's certainly hard to dig out the truth anymore, and it's just getting harder. And my response to Reverbo was, it doesn't pass the smell test for me. Because the coronavirus, in many instances, is a terrible candidate. It's the common cold. And the Wuhan weapons lab wasn't a bioweapons operation, as far as I could tell. It was kind of like the CDC. Because, among other things, SARS-CoV-1 became a huge problem about 20 years ago, and they wanted to keep it from happening a second time. And the only way that that SARS-CoV-1 got loose the first time was because it became zoonotic and jumped from the broader wild animal population into the human population. We are, after all, animals. And in a place that's got tens of millions of people living in it, it seems much more likely that if you had workers who got sick with it inside the lab, that they brought it into the lab from outside, because if it got loose inside the lab, then you'd have a whole lot more sick people in the lab. And it would also be more likely to have been discovered early. But just as I predicted, Nitwit Nero is out there desperately trying to get people to look the other way from the fact that the Manhattan District Attorney has convened a grand jury to look into his skeevy, likely, allegedly criminal activities and ramp up some good old-fashioned xenophobic racism against Asian people, which has already resulted in a massive increase in anti-Asian violence in this country. And he's desperately trying to take credit for the vaccine that, granted, he took and melanoma took, but which we would still be waiting for if he had been reelected. But I tell you this much, Joe Scarborough and Mika Minx Belarus Brzezinski are under his skin.
Crazy Joe Scarborough and his blood-curdling psycho wife.
And he's got a question mark behind wife? Does that mean we put a question mark behind behind melanoma's name?
are going crazy because of their ratings have absolutely tanked. They're wrong too often and always predictable. They were right about me in 2016, but I did better in the 2020 election with 12 million more votes. Stay tuned.
Just being Titanic to you. Does this stupid bastard actually think that he's going to be president again? Is he crazy like a fox? There's a Fox News joke in there somewhere. I don't know. I don't know.
But I do know it gets tiresome, and I do know that he's the one with the ratings tanking. That's an absolute fact. Because now that he doesn't have... Twitter or Facebook or anything. People just aren't paying as much, you know. And the breathless for-profit media don't have tweets to point to. They've got to go to his save. They've got to be on his list to get his Save America PAC burblings. And then be willing to share it out without, you know, a hissy, whatever. Ugh. Megan, in regard to the COVID-19 virus, if this was China's version of the CDC, then most likely they're already dealing with deadly viruses. This sounds more like the incorrect disposal of something after working with it and accidentally escaped from the lab into the general population. See, I just don't buy it. Because you'd have to have more than three people sick in the lab. At some point, when he gets caught up, maybe Paul from Parts Unknown can. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not the definitive answer on this. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, they've known about these. Everybody knows that bat shit and bat piss are poisonous. That's old news. As far back as when barges were literally rounding the horn and carrying vast quantities of bat guano from the Galapagos Islands to England, people were getting sick. There's a reason in, for instance, Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove, that the colonel who is trying to stop Group Captain Mandrake from raiding the Coke machine for enough coins to call the White House on the payphone, there's a reason it's funny that his name is Colonel Bat Guano. One of the greatest deadpan lines in that whole film is when Peter Sellers, as Group Captain Mandrake, looks at Keenan Wynn, who is holding a carbine on him, and says, "Now see here, Colonel Bat Guano, if that really is your name," and proceeds to... No first-time viewer with a working vocabulary who hears that line can help. Most people don't hear the rest of the line because they're busy laughing at the fact that his name is Colonel Bat Guano. We refer to the former member of Congress, Michelle Bachmann, as batshit crazy because batshit is toxic and bat piss is toxic. And in fact, the Wall Street Journal had a follow-up article, and it was a long one. I read it last night. About how the scientists have known, and about the toxicity of bat poo and bat pee in China, southwestern China to be particular, for a very long time, because people who went in to study. And to clean out bat guano because, you know, there's always a mining angle. There's
always a mining angle. There was an old copper mine in, I think, southwest China. And they went in to clean out the guano, and people got sick, and a couple people died, if I recall the particulars of the article correctly. I saw that, and I remembered what some of the learning I got when I was traveling up in Wisconsin. And I learned because in the southeastern United States, for instance, the first evidence you see of hand-hammered soft copper into these fantastic birdman shapes. Well, that copper comes from northern Michigan and northern Wisconsin. And it was gathered by the Anishinaabe people who'd been living there for 10,000 years or so. And they developed artistry and collection techniques. But having done that, at some point in time, a determination was made by those peoples that it was not okay to delve into the earth more than 6 inches or so. Because somehow or another, along the way, they learned that every time you dig into the earth, bad shit happens. And it comes all the way down to the present day when my good friend Mike Wiggins remarked once many years ago of the badass hillbilly, now dead, still dead, Mike Klein, who wanted to blow up a 20-mile-long, mile-wide, 1,400-foot trench in the hills there on the shores of Lake Superior to get at some iron ore. I remember Mike looking at me and saying, you know, you'd think it would be enough to tell them that a thunderbird lived in those hills, and they really don't want to bother it. And I thought that was so meaningful. But anytime, you know, it's a fact. I mean, okay, oh yeah, you know, we need copper, Robin. Yeah, we need a lot of stuff that we dig into the earth for. We killed 100,000 West Virginians, just West Virginians, in about 100 years' time, getting coal. Because we were not technologically advanced enough to figure out a way to get along without it. And besides, in capitalism, you can make a shit ton of money with it, digging it out of the earth. And so this old copper mine in China, it was the site of one of the early understandings of what could happen when an animal virus got into the human population. If you can get around the Wall Street Journal paywall, it's an article worth reading. But I do still I'm still deeply suspicious of the motive in trying to turn this into a thing. Some idea that the Chinese were working on something to kill us with, and then it got loose and killed us anyway? Because the story of COVID-19 is still the horrible way that COVID Caligula let it run wild across the United States and kill over 500,000 American citizens who did not have to die. I will hammer that and hammer that until I have hammered the hammer flat. It's a living planet with all kinds of living stuff on it. And sometimes things get loose in the human population that it would be better if they didn't. Again, smallpox, chickenpox, bullpox, anthrax, measles, mumps. There's virtually no human disease that did not enter the human population from close contact with the animal world. Leprosy. Leishmaniasis. The dreaded Nananua disease. going to happen. So, there's that. Answering my question, Megan says, does COVID Caligula think he'll be president again? Absolutely, and here's why. While his niece most certainly said he needs to sit down for a battery of psychological tests to really be diagnosed, he is at least a malignant narcissist. This man lives from his delusional ego. We saw this and how it played out for 4 years. He literally thought he could tweet legislation into existence. Infrastructure Week! He really thought reality was only what he said it was. There's a remember, that's not necessarily a Trump problem. That's a Republican problem. Because I'm so old that I can remember when the loyal Bushies made fun of people for insisting on reality. And they coined a joke phrase, the reality-based community. And said things like, you guys can worry about history.
Y'all can worry about history. We're not worrying about history. You know why? Because we're all going to be dead.
We lose sight of the perfidy and toxicity of Republican conservatism in the fog of MAGA Trumpism at our peril. This is not to diminish in any wise his awfulness, for he is awful. He's also awful. OFFAL. Word knowing. But we need to understand that this is a continuum. This is a downward slicky slide into hell. But Megan says he really thought reality was only what he said it was. There's a reason why we all had indigestion and high blood pressure and migraines for 4 years. He really believed all this. He got the biggest high of his life for 4 years because he could turn news stories by a tweet. Everyone waited breathlessly on tenterhooks to hear what he had to say. From his point of view, he thought that meant that everyone loved him. Of course, we knew it was because we were waiting, in the words of Linkin Park, for the end to come. We were scared to death and wondering if today was the day the idiot bastard started World War III or a nuclear war. And again, this sounds, the business with the Wuhan lab sounds a shitload like saber rattling. So yes, Megan concludes, he really does believe he'll be president again. He really believes what he says, and he really believes people miss him, and that without him, we'll all be up shit creek without a paddle. In a barbed wire canoe, I'll add. It's our job to make sure he doesn't, because said delusions. He needs to stay away from the nuclear football. Hell, he needs to stay away from human society, but, you know, wishful thinking. What's that? Jeremy in Vermont. Rush Trump 2024. Just think of the slogans maggots could chant. From the grave to the cage! That's quality. Randy in PA says, I don't get it. The Rona appears in the wet market in Wuhan in January of 2020, according to PBS's Frontline program. So why isn't it called COVID-20? Because it had first been identified in 2019. So it's COVID-19. We know that now. It was announced on December 31st, 2019. And I still say that we did a damn good job here of sorting out the timeline and putting together the weird little jigsaw puzzle pieces and, you know, building a puzzle that didn't have a goddamn corner piece to start with. And Steve in New York says, perhaps I just don't get it, but I don't know why it would matter even if the Chinese created it and let it loose. If that were the case, does that mean we wouldn't work to combat it or cure it? Sure we would, but you're thinking rationally, Steve. You're not thinking like some grunting, barking, hooting maggot who can't, or, you know, just a Republican. because they like to send other people to fight their wars. And these stupid bastards think that the United States, a population of 330 millions of people thereabouts, can take on a country whose population is measured in billions and whose population renders us a rounding error. They are that stupid. Some of these godforsaken maggots and Republicans, remember, early on in the reign of error of Nitwit Nero, remember, do you remember how we cringed, how we gasped when we found out that he asked members of the military,
what's the point in having nuclear weapons if you can't use them?
Whew! Do you remember how he didn't even know what the nuclear triad was? Yeah. And some of these maggots are infected with a yearning to see what a nuclear dystopia really looks like, because then, by God, they'd be able to get out their AR-15 freedom protectors. And they could, you know, and it'd be like Mad Max and Road Warrior, and we'd all have cool dune buggies riding around out in the nuclear wilderness, pointing at people and saying, "Them spike boobs." Tell me I'm wrong. I'm wrong. I don't think I'm wrong. Darlene in Connecticut says, Megan is so right. He does believe all his crazy lies and that he'll be president again. These delusions are the mark of a paranoid, psychopathic, psychotic narcissist. And I agree. You know, the simplest answer is most often the correct one. Oh, cowbell for Lee in New York. To Trump, the triad is when you have to golf without a fourth.
And you know, when you've got Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods there and you don't have a fourth, it's a nuclear triad with me and those two guys. They're almost as good as me. I'm so good I can win club trophies without even going out on the course. I've got the trophy.
And David in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, David. As for going to war with China, the United States could not even defend our own capital. Truth, that. Thanks for the reminder, David. Jeremy in Vermont says, yeah, the future won't be Mad Max. It's going to be fucking Waterworld without Kevin Costner. He'll be dead. Yeah, no spoilers. Blows my mind that Waterworld was directed by the director and Kevin Costner were friends all the way. Wonderful little film. Not Waterworld. Kevin Reynolds directed a coming-of-age film about a group of UT Austin graduates called Fandango, which has one of the most drop-dead romantic little wedding scenes ever. At the end, and the Pat Metheny soundtrack. If that's not at least one tissue at the end of that film, there's something wrong with you. And oh my God, Susie Amos is just so beautiful. And the music. And oh, you ball! I think the first time I saw that was like, 1986 or something. Rented it on VHS, and we all sat around watching it in my living room back at home in Alabama. And, oh, we cried. Oh, it's terrible.
Tell no one.
So we're about at the halfway point of the program, and I still have Titanic intellect to get into. I promise you we do. But it is also a Tuesday, and that means we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, which I always enjoy. And let's take a little break and see if maybe we can get the fundraising goal down from $750. That would be fantastic. It'd be wonderful. Because this really is a downhill sprint to the end of May. Been a rough month. I mean, it's rough everywhere. I know that. And so thank you to everyone who is stepping up and stepping in. If you've never, if you are able and you have never, and you enjoy this program at all, and, well, you'd like to see it continue, this is a great time. Okay. So let's check that out. And if you want to get in on the conversation, give a holler. But no, we've got a rising star in Titanic intellect, and I can't wait to get to it. Okay?
It's Tuesday, May 25, 2021.
We all know that these storms are coming, and we're going to be prepared. We have to be ready.
Biden doubles FEMA disaster funding as NOAA forecasts another intense hurricane season. U.S. renewable energy deployment hits record pace in 2021. Plus,
we're not interested as long as it's not anything about tax increases.
Republicans reject corporate tax increases to fund major infrastructure upgrades.
All of that obstructionism and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You got the fossil fuel mafia coming after you, man.
Don't I know it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's kind of nice to have a president who realizes that hurricane season is coming and realizes we should do something about it in advance.
Indeed it is. And yes, buckle up. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration forecasts that the 2021 Atlantic hurricane season, which starts June 1st, will again be busier than normal, but said it is unlikely to be as severe as the record-shattering season in 2020.
We'll see.
With the Atlantic hurricane season looming, President Biden on Monday announced he is doubling FEMA's emergency spending budget. Biden is making $1 billion available to states, territories, and tribes for pre-disaster mitigation and preparation for hurricanes and other extreme weather events like floods and wildfires. The order also directs NASA to develop next-generation climate data systems to better track how climate change is impacting communities. Biden announced the new funding at FEMA headquarters in Washington.
We have to be ready. When disaster strikes, we have to be there to protect and also help people recover. And so it's about not about red states and blue states. You all know that. It's about having people's backs in the toughest moments that they face.
Yeah, but does he have enough paper towels to throw at the victims?
FEMA's advanced preparation matters, not just to reduce the costs of emergency response, but also long-term dislocation of residents. A new study has found that globally in 2020, more than 40 million people were pushed out of their homes, even amid a pandemic, fleeing storms, floods, wildfires, and in some cases, conflict. The annual report from the European nonprofit Internal Displacement Monitoring Center said that the 40 million displaced globally in 2020 was the largest number in more than a decade.
Wow.
The report underscores why the U.S. Defense Department calls the destabilizing effects of man-made climate change a security threat multiplier. Here in the U.S., the White House and congressional Republicans remain far apart on negotiations for Biden's popular American Jobs plan to repair and upgrade the nation's crumbling infrastructure.
What a surprise.
The White House on Friday offered to cut nearly a quarter off of his original $2.25 trillion proposal, cutting funds for research, development, and U.S. manufacturing. But Politico reports Republicans have barely budged from their $568 billion counterproposal and rejected rejected Biden's plan to lift corporate tax rates to fund the investments. Instead, Republicans want user fees like tolls, requiring working Americans to pay to build the infrastructure and then pay again to use it. But the administration says corporations are among the largest benefactors of transportation infrastructure and should pay their fair share. As Biden explained in a recent press conference,
if everything is paid for by a user fee, well, then, you know, the burden falls on working class folks who are having trouble.
What happened to the Republicans' plan to become the populist party looking out for the little guy?
Well, a new Data for Progress poll found that 58% of voters support Democrats going it alone to pass the American Jobs Plan and the American Families Plan together using budget reconciliation, which allows for a simple majority vote.
Good. They're wasting time waiting for Republicans.
After a new EPA report last week warned that climate change is already costing the U.S. billions every year in more frequent and intense extreme weather disasters, Biden also issued a new executive order requiring federal agencies to develop a comprehensive climate risk assessment and strategy to prepare for climate-related financial shocks in sectors that they regulate. The order focuses on climate impacts that pose major risks for home prices, investments, pensions, and banking, and more in ways that could destabilize major sectors of the economy. And finally, deployment of clean energy in the U.S. in 2021 is already far exceeding the pace of last year's record rate. According to the American Clean Power Association, 13 new wind projects, 15 new solar projects, and 2 battery storage projects, all utility scale, became operational during the first 3 months of 2021, a 40% increase over the same period last year before the pandemic shutdown.
Oh, just wait for Donald Trump to start taking credit for that, too. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All I need a little
During the Green News Report, I had a chance to check in on the article Steve sent it along about the grand jury in New York. This is not a good thing for Donald Trump, in case anybody was wondering. This is brutal. This is a special grand jury. This isn't the kind of grand jury that gets impaneled just to handle, you know, stream littering and garden variety criminality. They may handle a few other things, but this is the Trump special grand jury, and they're looking at everything. The way that they dummied up they'd undervalue for tax purposes and overvalue for loan purposes, like criminal fraud. So, you know, watch this space. Now, I said I had a monumental Titanic intellect, and oh, we do. It's just so damn delightful, so much fun. And it has to do with an up and coming idiot in the Republican caucus of the Senate, but. You know how I mentioned last night when we were talking about Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber, and I said she couldn't even come up with her own crazy, that she had to bogart it off of somebody else, and in that case, she had stolen the just like being sent to a Nazi death camp because I have to wear a mask thing. She stole that from a different cucumber by the name of Deanna Lorraine. Well, the same thing applies to freshman Senator Tommy the Tuber from Talabama. What a genius! He, of course, like probably every other Republican in the Senate, is opposed to the January 6th commission to look into exactly how it was that a bunch of members of his party came to attack the capital of the United States and did a few gazillion dollars worth of damage and shit in their hands and rubbed it on the walls and peed on things and tore up stuff, broke windows, attacked cops, then, you know, tried to overturn a legitimate, full, and fair election. That Tommy the Tuber. The same Tommy the Tuber that was shitting bricks, and maybe this is really why he opposes the January 6th commission. Because he was implicated in conversations in the middle of the attack with the guy who precipitated it. And by the guy who precipitated it, I mean the former guy. Mm-hmm. So a reporter by the name of Andrew Solander interviewed Tommy the Tuber. And he said that... he said, well, it's like this. I can't support the January 6th commission until they make it bipartisan.
What?
Until they make it bipartisan. See, Tommy the Tuber, who I suspect has an intellect similar to another senator, one with a real passion for college football, who actually played the game, probably had a few too many head injuries, is of late running around the country talking about how he won't support any legislation
unless there's bipartisanship. We got to have bipartisanship.
Well, before Tommy Tuber rips off Joe Manchin anymore, he needs to actually find out, because, I mean, at least Joe Manchin, giving credit where credit's due, at least Joe Manchin talks about wanting bipartisanship when he knows that there aren't any goddamn Republicans who will get on the goddamn bill, because Joe Manchin doesn't know how to use bipartisanship. And I've been meaning to bring this up for a few days, and Titanic Tuesday is as good a day as any. But, well, this. If Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema truly are dedicated to bipartisanship, then they use that desire for bipartisanship to accomplish things they want to see done. In other words, you go to your Republican, your moderate Republican pals, you know, like Citizens Collins, and you say, Susie, I really want to be bipartisan, but that means I've got to have some Republicans on board, and well, I need you to stand with me, Susie, because if I don't get some bipartisanship here, I'm going to go over and I'm just going to join the majority and we'll just get this done without y'all. But I don't want to do that. I want us to work together as Americans, Susie. Or he could say it maybe to Lisa, cuz he loves Lisa Murkowski. Sure, he said, I'd gladly go to Alaska and campaign for a Republican like Lisa Murkowski.
Yuck. There's enough of phony baloney sweetness in all that you just about need a bolus dose of insulin to get through it. Ugh.
But Tommy the Tuber didn't actually know anything about the 1-6 commission language, Because the problem is, the way the commission is established, it's bipartisan. It can't get any more bipartisan. It has an equal number of Democrats and Republicans on it. They share subpoena powers. Subpoenas won't go out without bipartisanship. But Tommy the Tuber is rapidly proving to the world that he's going to challenge Ron Johnson for stupidest male member of the Senate of the United States, because I'm pretty sure that Marsha Gedneth Blackburn has the girl half of that nailed down. And, of course, when it went public that Tommy the Tuber had said that he won't support the January 6th commission unless it's bipartisan. Bipartisan is what we need, some bipartisan. And they're busting their ass. You know, Susan Collins is afraid it'll continue to work into 2022. She, too, has not bothered to read the legislation because it specifically sunsets the commission by the end of 2021. Now, I don't know why you would put something as huge and complex. I don't know why you would attach an artificial end date to it if you're actually serious about getting to the bottom of things. But, you know, that's me. But Tommy the Tuber, he wants some bipartisanship, which means he's also telegraphing, to, if it should actually come into being, that they'd better, by God, lay off his ass, even though he was up to his hairy knuckles in it while it was going on. Him and constitutional scholar Mike Lee of Utah. Ugh. And the heat's getting bad enough on Joe Manchin, by the way, that he's gone so far as to announce that, you know, even if the Republicans in the Senate use the filibuster to block the creation of the January 6th commission, well, he's still going to just, you know, sit there and take it in the shorts because bipartisan. Again, that same Andrew Solander reported that when Joe Manchin took a question about supporting filibuster reform, even though the Republicans are going to filibuster the January 6th commission, would he finally stand up for America in that regard? And, of course, Joe's answer is no, he will not stand up for America. He answered no, and he was laughing because, you know, there's nothing like a ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha attack on the Capitol of the United States on January 6th led by supporters of an illegitimate president who's trying to set himself up as a goddamn dictator and defeat what little democracy we have in our electoral process. Ha, 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 Joe Manchin said, no, I can't take the fallout. The hell? Laughing loudly, he said. Now, this is completely at odds with a joint statement that he issued with Kirsten Curtsey Cinema back on earlier today. My statement with Senator Cinema on the need for a bipartisan commission to investigate the events of January 6th. Events of January 6th were horrific.
We could never have imagined an attack on Congress and our Capitol at the hands of our own citizens. In the hours and days following the attack, Republican and Democratic members of Congress condemned the violence and vowed to hold those responsible accountable so our democracy will never experience an attack like this again. A bipartisan commission to investigate the events of that day has passed the House of Representatives with a bipartisan vote, there's the word, and is a critical step to ensuring our nation never has to endure an attack at the hands of our countrymen again. We implore our Senate Republican colleagues to work with us to find a path forward on a commission to examine the events of January 6th. But no, he can't stand the fallout from standing up for his country and the Constitution he swore to uphold. Had my fingers crossed. And just kind of let that set in for a moment. Because that's exactly what's going on here. Every single Republican who in the House or in the Senate opposes the creation of this commission to get to the bottom of how this happened is violating their oath of office. Because the January 6th Commission is intimately connected with the idea of upholding the Constitution. Because the Constitution was attacked on January the 6th by enemies domestic. Really? So I'll have some 20-something staffer type up some bilious horseshit, and I'll get my pal Kirsten Curtsy Cinema to sign off on it, and we'll say that we've got to find a way forward. But I won't create this. I won't help to uphold the Constitution by going against my Republican friends and making them eat it and smile. I won't do that. I can't stand the fallout. Ugh. Jesus. That's where it all stands. Of course, Megan says, Tommy the Tuber is against the January 6th Commission. Speaking as a pet owner, when your dogs get loose and piss and shit in the house, you tend to not want to take responsibility for it because, you know, you were supposed to train them better. Ooh. I think that's, I don't know, your analogy may have a little bit of a problem, Megan. This is not a criticism, but to suggest that the maggots who attacked and Republicans who attacked at the Capitol of the United States were on a par with beloved household pets, that's a real insult to beloved household pets, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, so much Titanic intellect. So little time. Darlene with a question. Could this, the grand jury that Vance has convened, be why the DOJ is appealing Judge Amy Berman Jackson's order to release that Barr memo in full concerning Trump's obstructions of justice? I'm trying to figure that one out, and I'm not feeling the explanations so far, including those of a law professor from my law school alma mater that former FBI agent and Yale professor Asha Rangappa seemed to agree with in part. I see the present DOJ under under President Biden and Merrick Garland. I see that as that institutional, that defending the institution thing that they're so fond of. I mean, we can let out a previous, and by the way, the way the Washington Post reported it today made me a little bit, It just made my art of word knowing hurt.
The Washington Post earlier today wrote, as that deadline neared, talking about the deadline for revealing the memo about Barr's, you know, Bill Pepe the Frog Barr's excuses for dummying up the investigation, the Mueller report and everything. The Justice Department had a deadline for releasing the memo, courtesy of Judge Amy Berman Jackson, who said, I read the memo, and this is bullshit. Well, she didn't say that in so many words. She said that like federal judges say things. But that was the upshot. As that deadline neared, the government filed papers seeking both to appeal the ruling and to appease the court by offering a partially unredacted version of the document, making the first two pages public while filing an appeal to keep the other half dozen pages secret. So that means there's a total of 8 pages, 2 out of 8, 1 out of 4. They revealed an unredacted 25% of the memo. Take 25% of any 8 pages and just see how much meaning you can ultimately get out of it. I referenced Joseph Heller's Catch-22 yesterday. And here we are again. There's an ongoing gag in Catch-22 in which, while he is in the hospital trying desperately not to fly any more missions because people are trying to kill him up there, Yossarian is assigned by the chaplain, that's Chaplain A.T. Tapman, who, when anybody calls him father, says, oh no, I'm only an Anabaptist. Love that line, only an Anabaptist. It's religious humor. Anyway, Yossarian gets to censor the letters from the soldier stationed at Pianosa to home. And so he begins to redact, otherwise known as censor, the letters home creatively. At one point in time, he redacts one letter so that the only words remaining are a, an, and the. He redacts all the verbs, all the adverbs, all the adjectives, all the gerunds, all the nouns. And the only thing left is a, an, and the. Participles. Yeah, before Steve can start naming other parts of speech. Love you, Steve. And another letter, he redacts all the words, and at the end signs it, I long for you tragically, A.T. Tapman, Chaplain. Two hilarious results later. Well, I couldn't help but think of that when I read that paragraph from the Washington Post, and I got a little help online trying to understand what the phrase partially unredacted version of the document means. Doesn't that mean that the other 6 pages are still partially redacted? Or that, somebody on Facebook said, no, that means that the parts that they unredacted had been previously redacted. And, oh, the art of word knowing is hard. But the only thing I can come up with is institutional defense. Because, again, back to Dr. Strangelove, it's one of those, they'll see everything, they'll see the big board. Now, we can't be knowing everything about what's in there, because it could prove troublesome, problematic. Could there be, and I'm really reaching here, but we've spent a lot of time in the last 5 years. I know gerunds are nouns, Steve. All gerunds are nouns. All nouns are not gerunds. Gerund nouns are nouns, hashtag. with some inside baseball. But we spent upwards of 5 years or more talking about the odiousness of that Office of Legal Counsel memo from the bad old days of the immediately post-Nixon administration that essentially said that the president is above the law. That no president, no matter what crime he commits, can be charged with a crime while in office. And we posited all kinds of different reductio ad absurdum examples thereof. Like, for instance, the idea that Nitwit Nero could take an AR-15 and under the current Department of Justice understanding, under that Office of Legal Counsel memo, Donald Trump could have taken an AR-15 and gone galumphing and shambling out of the White House last summer when the protests were at their height at Black Lives Matter Plaza, right there in front of the White House. And he could have taken his AR-15 with a 100-round drum magazine on it and opened up on the crowd, and the National Guard, the FBI, the D.C. Metro Police, the Capitol Police, the law enforcement of the Secret Service could have all witnessed him mowing down American citizens in cold blood. Or he could have just taken that self-same AR-15 with people before the pandemic taking the tour of the White House and just gone through and mowed them down. And no matter who witnessed it, no matter how many members of law enforcement under the Office of Legal Counsel memo, again, no one could have prosecuted him. And quite possibly no one could have even charged him with first-degree murder under this understanding. And like I said, I am reaching in this explanation, but it may not be as loopy as it sounds to me and probably to you. Maybe there's something in those six pages that touches on all of that, that maybe you don't want to have come out right this minute. Maybe you don't want a reiteration of that stupid anti-constitutional rule. Maybe you don't want press releases sliming out of Mar-a-Lardass saying, see, I told you I was above the law. Maybe you don't want to do that. And maybe tangentially, Darlene, you're right. Maybe you don't want that argument out there, even though what Cy Vance is doing in Manhattan is strictly a New York State matter and not the matter of the federal government and not subject to any pardon powers, even if Fulius Geezer has a pocket pardon that he's playing with. That's my best guess. Steve in New York says, as to January 6th, if the Democrats cannot make serious political hay about the GOP opposition, the Democrats need to just pack it up and give in. Pack it in and give up. I know what a dim view, Steve, that you take of the Democrats' ability to get a message out, and sometimes I'm right there on the same page with you, but you've got to have some cooperation. You got to have some cooperation from the multimillionaires of the for-profit media. They've got to be willing to help you. What did Dim Leader call it? They've got to be willing to help you catapult the propaganda. Or you're going nowhere. So I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air with all of this. I continue to find it troubling, but it remains to be seen. And with the appeal, well, they're going to appeal it to the D.C. Circuit, and from the D.C. Circuit, it goes up to Justice handmaid who has to ask her husband if she can have an opinion. Some feminist. And all the rest of that slimy majority, all the way down to old Balls and Strikes Roberts, who perjured himself during his confirmation hearings. Jesus, it would be nice if somebody would introduce some articles of impeachment against those punks. Punks and pissants. Well, you know, wish in one hand and shit in the other, Robin, and see which one fills up first. Well, we know which one fills up first, because they did that on January 6th, and then they rubbed it on the walls.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and a couple of other Titanic moments. And by the way, this is now officially at least a two-hour filler-robster. If you've got something you'd like to add to the program, feel free to jump in and participate. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. And, of course, the stress line, 844-843-4676, and you're mighty welcome to jump in. It's almost as though it would not be a Titanic Tuesday if we didn't have a Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist sighting. And so it is that we have one. This is hilarious. Over the weekend, Richard Marx, you know, the musician, who was big in the 80s, mid to late 80s, A couple of really sappy ballads and a couple of kind of up and bebopping tunes. Don't Mean Nothing, Shoulda Known Better. Well, he tweeted. And he said, "I'll say it again. I want to quote this directly and not screw it up." He said, where'd it go? Yeah, Richard Marx. Son of Carl. Yeah. Anyway, he said, "I'll say it again. If I run into, and this has turned into a thing, if I run into Rand Paul's neighbor, I'll give him a hug and buy him as many drinks as he can hold." Well, this cranked up the goddamn triggered snowflake outrage machine on the part of the poor little precious. With Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, blaming Richard Marx for the fact that he got a suspicious package, unverified, of course. "C-list celebrities are encouraging violence against me and my family. Just this weekend, Richard Marx called for violence against me, and now we receive this powder-filled letter." No, really. I guess he's accusing Richard Marx of sending a powder filter. But no, and see that all that a horrible libertarian like Richard Marx like Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head have to do is spend a little time soul searching
and just asking themselves. I mean, you know, a semi-enlightened human being would do this. Why do tens of millions of my own countrymen hate my guts and despise the very air that I breathe? Why is that? Because logic would dictate that it's not because tens of millions of Americans just hate him to have somebody to hate. I mean, that's what the Kardashians are for. Jesus, have you seen the migraine ad that they gave Khloe Kardashian I don't know how many gazillion dollars to do, where she's talking about some new pill that makes her migraines go away? What? And there's a little baby girl who, like, one minute Khloe Kardashian's eating popcorn, and the next minute she's cuddling this little girl, and you can almost hear the direction over the intercom. Cue the kid. Cue the cuddling. Because maybe it's just me, but does anybody look at that and go, oh, yeah, I so identify with Khloe Kardashian. That's some serious tone-deaf advertising. At least to be running on, you know, my filthy morning habit. Over and over and over again. But, no, I mean, tens of millions of people don't just hate Rand Paul on general principle. Tens of millions of Americans despise him because of what a horrible attempt at a human being he is. Tens of millions of people have regular, ordinary, daily lives to live. And have better things to do than hate Rand Paul. But he engenders it. He courts it. It's almost like he, I don't know, gets off on it. Weird. Bad weird. But you get the idea that Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, The reason he is like he is, you know, it's just like what we say about racism. No baby is ever born racist. Racism has to be carefully taught. Nobody's ever born to be born as awful as Rand Paul is. I mean, and this gets into the very, very complicated debate over nature versus nurture. Maybe Rand Paul, from the moment that his icky old daddy... I don't have in my heart to ruin dinner. But maybe he was going to be an awful person, but he could have been a less awful person without the upbringing that he had with all of this aggrieved, privileged white grievance that informs libertarianism in the United States of America. Maybe. And Rand Paul's neighbor jokes are legion at this point. But oh my God, the pissing and the moaning. Even his spokes creep got in on the act, going after Richard Marx. So you're supporting a guy who committed a felonious assault against my boss? You think that's okay? Oh, bitch, go brush your hair. But that's the one thing you'll never, at least as long as the checks are clearing. I mean, we've seen it happen. As long as they have some sort of official power, and as long as the checks are clearing,
there will never be that degree of self-examination necessary to grow as a human being. Now, we've seen, and some of them show up, for instance, on MSNBC. David Jolly comes to mind, former Republican congressman. Did the horrible things as a Republican congressman, but in the age of MAGA, and it becomes a question of, you know, is this enlightened self-interest or has there been a road to Damascus moment, realized how awful the modern Republican Party is. But if you... and that's what makes me so suspicious. There's a market for Republicans who will say that Republicans are bad. And this is why I've talked at such length about this revolting cult of personality that's arising around around Dick in a Wig Cheney. Because she's never stopped being horrible. And her version of conservatism has never done anything but hurt this country. As a bought and paid for creature of the hydrocarbon industry, everything she's ever done has been with the aim of hurting this country geologically, geographically, geophysically, anthropologically, socially, culturally. But we're all supposed to sit up and all, Dick and a Wig Cheney is, she's a great American. Even though she voted with Donald Trump during his miserable term in office 93% of the time. You can't get around this stuff. Going back to the DOJ memo, thank you very kindly to David in South Carolina, Stan, for this. A Twitter account called Mueller, she wrote. That's clever. So what Merrick Garland, you know, I always thought that Jessica in Murder, She Wrote, I always thought that all of those murders were frame jobs because I'm pretty sure she was the murderer. I mean, come on. Everywhere she went, somebody fucking died. And it was the only thing that all of the murders had in common. I think she was one of the most clever serial killers in all of television history. But anyway, Mueller, she wrote on Twitter, says, so what Merrick Garland released here proves that Section 1 of the memo can't have been advisory because the same people that wrote it, Engel, Rabbit, Rosenstein, O'Callaghan, helped craft the Barr letter to Congress. What that says to me is that the DOJ conspired to falsely claim the decision not to prosecute was theirs to make, and they conspired to mischaracterize the Mueller findings 3 weeks before the report was released to the public. Wow. That's some dirty business. So maybe my tortured, explanation is just completely off base, and it could easily be. What's that, Jeremy? Oh, Jeremy just jumped in with another $10, taking us down to $740 to go, saying, let's not waste time and knock down this large balance. It would be great. Let's see, we are Monday, Tuesday, and 6. So we're, what, $140 away from... Anyway, hopefully we'll finish all of this. Sorry to even mention it. We've had such fun today. But Jeremy points out, as to Rand Paul, well... I think you have a sound clip that explains why tens of millions of Rand's countrymen and women hate his guts. In fact, I think it starts with the words, "You."
You dick!
D you know, it's a little bit reductive, but it's probably absolutely true. Mm-hmm. So, poor Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, needs a safe space. Mm-hmm. Oh, and because it wouldn't be a Titanic Tuesday also if we didn't go down to, I think, Florida. St. John's County, Florida, has a school called Bartram Trail High School. And the story kind of grabbed me when I originally saw that, because it's, to the extent that it's named Bartram's Trail, that tell, and to the extent that early Florida history the early incursions of white English-speaking people into Florida, the son of John Bartram was one of the people who did that. And John Bartram, who died in 1776, being the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of Agnes, well, I saw Bartram's Trail and I had to read the story. And I kind of wish I hadn't. Because, for God's sakes, not again. The next time somebody says, "Oh, but Bruga Bruga, those Arab Muslim countries, Bruga Bruga, beekeeper suits and veils and shit." Yeah, just remind them of Bartram Trail High School in St. John's County. You know, they take it, if it's, and I take it, it's still kind of like it was back in the day for me. You've got young high school students who are into photography, and so they go and they take pictures of the basketball games and the football games and the volleyball games and the softball games, and they take pictures of the French club and the Latin club and the key club and the science club and the drama club, and they take, and that all goes into either the student newspaper, which is probably online now, or it goes into the yearbook, which apparently I think is still a thing, a physical thing. And also included in the yearbook are photographs of the student body, the individual students. Well, of course, at St. John's County's Bartram Trail High School, they have a dress code. The vast majority of the dress code, of course, applies to girls. Because, of course, you know, we're so much better than those Muslim countries. Just as is the case in other Abrahamic religion countries, women are always responsible for the heated, uncontrollable passions of the males. Golly, I mean, them males, they get a sight of a naked ankle and they can't help themselves and they just get all overtaken in a hump and fury. Ankle. Must fuck. Must play with self. So, one young woman, Riley O'Keefe, had gone to the trouble of clearing her outfit for photo day with the school. And young Riley O'Keefe, was developing along just like young women do. And she had, and them's weren't fake. Not that she was putting anything out there on display or being gross or oh my God, provocative. Jesus. You know how the National Geographic used to go into so-called primitive cultures? Did you hear the air asshole quotes around primitive? And when white colonialists went into these cultures in years, the first thing they did is try to cover up the mammary glands of the women who weren't because apparently those cultures, the men didn't go into paroxysms of sexual frenzy, seeing the things on the females that were meant to feed babies. And because Jesus, they lost their fucking minds and started making the natives cover up. And there was an entire generation or three of testosterone-fueled young males whose only access to female nudity was Jesus Christ in the National Geographic. Well, apparently that's still alive and well in the third decade of the 21st century of the common era, at least, and certainly not only at Bartram Trail High School in St. Johns County, Florida. Because young Riley O'Keefe said, will this outfit be okay for the school picture? She was a ninth grader. They said, sure, no problem. And then after the photo was shot, in a very ham-handed, ham-fisted way, son of a gun! If the school didn't go in and Photoshop a cover for her, I guess, demon-possessed young breastises. Meanwhile, as young Riley O'Keefe pointed out when she was interviewed by First Coast News, he said, there really does seem to be a double standard around here because the high school boys' swim team was photographed in their Speedos. Well, I can't help it. I mean, they're just boys being boys and, you know, I mean, boys. And she went on and said, it doesn't make any sense that they looked at that and were like, nah, this is okay, but this isn't. And Mama was never contacted about having the photo reshot. One young woman showed up. She was wearing like a cami and a flannel shirt. And they literally changed the color of her flannel shirt and then put some sort of a flap over her chest. And they didn't do it to just young Ms. O'Keefe. They did it to dozens of girls. They created some sort of a nunnery standard. Because Merca. Because this makes America great, because Florida is a deeply redly Republican state. Because Jesus don't want to be seeing any cleavage. Oh, I know. Brother Deacon Asa says, come on, Kincaid. We can't have all these youngins showing all that collarbone all willy-nilly. Do you have any idea how worked up a pubescent boy can get over a collarbone? And so it turns out this was just the tip of the iceberg. See, there's a Titanic Tuesday reference. A tip of the iceberg about the fact that St. Johns County has this huge disproportionate impact problem targeting female students. And the parents who are pissed off are right. This doesn't say anything about the girls. This says everything in the world about what a bunch of pervs
the male administration in those schools are. And then, of course, social media being social media, you got these girls being bullied with people sharing the photos on various platforms. Yvette Ballard is the mother of one of these children. And she said, they're getting all this backlash on the children, and they had nothing to do with it, so now you've made them even more of a target. And in capitalist America, guess how the Bartram's Trail High School's administration responded? Well, if you want, and you call about it, we will refund the cost of your child's yearbook. That's not the answer. And, of course, it's not just Bartram's Trail High School. This happens all over the country, and as Brother Deacon Asa points out, on the other hand, the Ayatollah is proud of you. You see, even the Americans are coming around to understanding what a bunch of dangerous sluts women are. Assholes. I remember way, way, way back when I was still on the air in Beckley. There was a bit of a kerfuffle over at Beckley Woodrow Wilson High School when a girl's mom got pissed because her daughter got sent home from school for wearing a pair of shorts by a popular brand at the time. I don't know if it still is, but it was popular among young girls, and it was called Juicy Couture. And she was wearing a pair of shorts that simply had the word Juicy, J-U-I-C-Y, written across the back. And when I saw the story, my immediate question was, why is the principal of a high school inspecting the bottoms of adolescent girls and gatekeeping what can be written upon their pants back there? I mean, the name of the brand is, because, you know, capitalism, marketing, is meant to be provocative. But it takes a whole lot of pervy, adult pervy, to look at a ninth grade girl and think that she is behaving in a sexually promiscuous manner by wearing the same kinds of clothes that everyone in her fucking culture wears. And then, you know, there's also the fact that there's nothing dirty about the human body. And that if boys behave badly, that isn't on the girl. It's on the failure of the parents to try to raise up their little boy children to be decent human beings. Exactly. Steve in New York says, the Florida young women's photos presenting the 2021 class of Aunt Lydia recruits. Yeah. Oh, I like my response to the old hillbilly couple better, Jeremy. I at least it was original, and I'm not bogarting off of Mrs. Doubtfire. As to National Geographic, Steve says, or even if the primitive men did go into paroxysms about the women hit the men if they touched. As Lilu says in Fifth Element, not without permission. And she could enforce. All right, let's break this filibuster and check in over on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yo, Robin, it's me, Reggie from Decatur, Georgia, talking at you yet once again. I wanted to reiterate on that story you just told. How do you feel about it, Robin, when they altered the high school young lady? Well, upper.
Women, not one, no. Women, yeah, young women,
women,
dozens
young
of them.
Women, yes, of their chests, you know, or should I say breasts?
Well, I mean, I think I've made it clear how I feel, Reggie, but you tell me.
Well, I'm disgusted. I mean, This is a school. This is not their family.
This is a public school.
That too. It's not their family. I thought the parents were supposed to be the ultimate deciders of what their young daughters wear or not to wear. Although I know they had guidelines and rules and regulations that they have to follow.
The girls followed the rules. That's the whole point.
Yes, exactly. And not the, and who the
she
hell
went
was
to, she went to the principal's office and said, is this okay? And they went, sure.
And then what happened? She got, shall we say, tricked or betrayed.
Well, I mean, I guess they had second thoughts and were worried that they, well, they decided they needed to modestize up these young women so they could, because they weren't displaying appropriate, good, God-fearing Christian values.
And the guys were, by wearing those tight-ass Speedos that go up the ass crack, who wants to wear them?
I think our Australian friends some time back, particularly Robert in Australia, told us they've got a name for those things down there. They're called banana hammocks, Reggie.
Ooh, who wants to wear them? Who wants to wear them? You know, nobody, right? Because they're uncomfortable. You know, why don't you just stick to wearing good old school underwear or boxer briefs? You know.
Well, no, but you can't swim in those. That was the boys' swim team. You know, the boys' football team dresses in, and they put their football uniforms on, and they get their picture taken. And the same thing with the swim team. Now, if it had been the boys' golf team posing with their mashy niblicks in Speedos, I think that would have been a little over the top.
Yes, it would have been. I believe they have trunks for those.
Well, no, I mean, there's a reason the swim team swims. There's a reason the boys' swim team swims in Speedos, because there's less resistance through the water, and when you're racing, you want to have less resistance. And a big old pair of baggy board shorts soaks up a bunch of water and holds you back.
Right.
So I mean, right. I understand the Speedos. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Those are guess your religion swim gear. Wait a minute, I got an O from Reggie. I don't think that's that. You get a cowbell right. But
thank you.
You're welcome. But the thing is, I mean, that's okay. It's okay. Human physiology, human anatomy is okay. We look like something.
Yes, we are. We are something.
But you know, the standard that they attach to these girls who weren't doing anything but being the girls that they are, damn, you know?
Right, it's sexist, right, Robin? It's sexist. Obviously sexist, right? Obviously and apparently
ain't
sexist,
no question,
right,
about it. And to add insult to injury, hypocritical as can be.
Yeah. And how embarrassing it is towards them, right? They're going to have to live with this shame for the rest of their lives forever.
Well, they're being tormented on social media over it.
No kidding. Somebody has to put a stop to that, Robin. And I do mean ASAP, and like yesterday, quickly and real soon. Somebody has to put a stop to it, because that's cyberbullying, I think. Or am I wrong on saying that?
No. You got it right. You're spot on.
Yeah, it's cyberbullying. I mean, they're going to be embarrassed about this for the rest of their natural born lives, Robin. How are they going to? They're going to go to college.
I don't know. I think they'll remember it. I don't think they're going to be. I don't think they're necessarily going to be embarrassed about it. It's certainly detract. I feel bad for the ninth grade girl, because she's got three more years with these assholes.
Yeah. What about the? Go ahead, Robin.
The senior girls will just whatever. And go off and do whatever it is they do, whether they go to college or go into the workforce or get married, whatever. Yeah. But you know, the real shame of it is, it's hard enough being an adolescent. Yeah, I don't know of any adult who has ever said, you know, I'd give anything to go back and be in ninth grade again. Holy shit. No fucking way.
I wouldn't. Would you, Robin?
No!
I wouldn't.
For a variety of reasons, I wouldn't. But the thing is, it's hard. You know, high school is hard. Middle school and high school are hard enough. And they're really, really hard just because of the nature of what it's like to be an adolescent, because you're in that nether world between childhood and adulthood, and you're testing boundaries, and you're the hormones are going crazy, and you're trying to learn at the same time.
Yeah.
And you know, the way you respond to that is not by calling attention to sexuality like these goddamn stupid dress codes do.
Right. Which should be changed, by the way. Don't you think so, Robbie? They should
What's the purpose?
Oh, what is the purpose?
Well, the purpose is to enforce authoritarian notions of sameness. You know, they offer excuses like, well, you know, we wear our uniforms at this school because we don't want anybody feeling left out because they can't afford $500 sneakers that the rich kids can.
Right.
And you, I do, too. I do, too.
What do you think it is?
I think it's straight up misogynistic slut shaming.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's a way of trying to force these young women to understand that they live in a goddamn patriarchal society, and they will not, by God, cross the patriarchy.
Right.
And the people who are proponents of that patriarchy don't understand that they are doing more to destroy the patriarchy than they would have been if they just left the girls alone.
True. And wasn't this a woman that did all this, altered the pictures?
They said the school. So, the school, you know, right. The administration is probably made up of men and women alike. But that doesn't mean that adult women can't be capable of doing this kind of stuff, because, you know, and again, let's be clear, they're probably Christians, and they feel like their religion entitles them to define what is and isn't acceptable manifestations of physicality, and I mean, it is not even a manifestation of sexuality, for God's sakes.
Right. Right. Maybe they're jealous women. I don't know. Maybe they're jealous women. Am I wrong for saying that?
Nay, well, you know, I don't know that it's so much jealousy, but maybe maybe you're 30 years in the school system, and maybe you long for your youth, and you remember how you were treated, so shit rolls downhill and you're going to do it to them too. I mean, that's how cultural, not necessarily religious, but cultural hateful phenomena like female circumcision go generation to generation to generation. Well, it was done to me, so we're going to do it to you. And then she grows up mutilated, and she says, it was done to me, we're going to do it to you. And so somewhere along the way, you have to step in and break these goddamn chains.
Right. Who's going to do it, Robin? Who's going to do it?
Well, in the case of Bartram's Trail High School in St. Johns County, Florida, the parents are trying to do it. They may not even know that they're trying to do it, but they know that what was done to their babies was wrong.
Yeah. You think they'll sue or just let it go? You think they'll sue or just let it go?
I don't know if there's anything to sue over, but you make a big enough stink about it that they never do it again. And then if you're activist about it, you continue and you... And especially, you know, for these ninth grade girls, you stay on that school board like a duck on a damn June bug.
Right. Well, don't falter. Don't never let it go or rest.
Right. I mean, there's that old saying from the founding of the United States that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance.
Yeah.
Well, that's true here too.
Yeah,
and true. I hope someday. I hope someday we can get past all this silly horse shit. But
me too.
But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, what did they do to the girls' gymnastics team? What did they do to the girls' swim team?
I hope they didn't change any of that.
I don't know. Maybe they photoshopped some burkas onto them.
right. Maybe they did. Maybe they did. But that's not right either. Who is the school to decide what these girls can or can't wear? Right, Robin?
Well, the Supreme Court gives broad latitude to schools to trample the individual and civil rights of anyone who is in a school system.
Right. Now, if you were one of these women, or if you were one of these high school students who had a yearbook picture taken and it was altered because of what you were wearing, when they first said okay, but then they changed their minds and then they altered it to make you look like you were wearing something else when that was never what you were wearing in the first place, and it went out over the yearbook, and your parents saw it, and you were upset. I mean, you were upset, and your parents saw it. You took it home to show it to your parents. How exactly would they feel that your picture was altered from its original?
Well, my parents were kind of radical, mm-hmm. or not yeah. radical, but they didn't take any shit, and they would
exactly.
go to the wire, and did go to the wire
yeah.
for me.
Yeah. Yeah, so they didn't like what was happening to you. They didn't like what was happening yeah. to you, Robin. Go ahead, Robin.
No, no, please.
Oh, but meanwhile, you got all these teachers, male and female, all these teachers and teachers aides and substitute teachers having sex with young students. You know what I'm saying, Robin?
Is it a good point, Reggie? Is it any wonder?
Yeah. Yeah, what about that? Isn't that
well? One flows from the other. The sexualization of children is how children wind up being sexually abused.
Right, and we gotta change that too, Robin. We gotta change that too.
I agree.
What do you think?
No, I agree with you. I think your takes on all of this are rock solid. By the way, let me share with you a couple of opinions. Darlene in Connecticut writes, I don't understand the Facebook bullying of these female students. There were 80
right.
photos. There are 80 photos, Reggie, that these pervs
yeah.
messed with. And yeah, the school administration had a cocky, cold response that the parents can return the yearbooks and get their money back. But until the outcry was
right.
national and the school administration realized, oh, shit, we could have a lawsuit or two or three more on our hands, then today some school
right.
spokes douche contritely admitted that they messed up and that they will learn from this. Total bullshit. Don't buy it.
Right.
This is a cultural problem in and with this school. It is endemic. The girls were always stressed out. Families reported about what they wore to school, while boys in the same families would just roll out of bed wearing any old stuff to class when running late. Yeah, those banana hammocks were even more revealing than what the girls were wearing. It's depressing. We're still stuck and mired in this sexist shit. The school needs to ante up and redo those yearbooks free of charge to the impacted families, and those girls can wear whatever the fuck they want to in the redos. And see, here's another angle on this. I don't know if they still do this. It's down south.
Right.
Maybe they do. But, okay, when I was a pimply-faced little high school senior, you know, they just come and take
yeah.
your picture when you're ninth, tenth, 11th grade. But you get a senior
right.
portrait. So, you know, I had a jacket and tie and a dress shirt and,
right.
you know, fresh haircut. Still got the picture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the girls in my, the senior girls in my class, they weren't allowed to just put on, like a prom gown or, a formal dress. No.
Right.
They wore something called a drape.
A drape.
And the funny thing is, the drape was probably more not revealed. Well, it was a good 2 or 3 inches off the shoulder.
Yeah.
And it came across their busts in sort of a sweetheart neckline.
Yeah.
And so it revealed everything right down to and sort of emphasized what you weren't seeing, if you understand what
right.
I'm saying.
Right.
And so I'd love to see one of these yearbooks. Not out of any
yeah.
prurient interest, but I'd love to see one of these yearbooks just to see
if they've still got the senior girls doing the damn drapes.
Right. But I doubt it, Robin. I doubt it, don't you? Maybe they do and maybe they don't.
I bet you they're still doing it where I grew up. I don't know.
Right. Right.
Lee in New York says, I wouldn't call it cyberbullying. I'd call this plain old-fashioned bullying. This was in the real world, right. Not online. I understand there being a dress code. I've seen dress codes at the office. There has to be one person who has to push the limits. As far as how the girls dress, they should not try to hide that they're girls. They shouldn't have to try to hide that they're girls. I wonder if the school would prefer a Sharia dress code. Right. Or, you know, an ultra orthodox Jewish dress code, or maybe a hyper super duper Spanish Inquisition Roman Catholic dress code. You know, there are still Catholics out there that run around with these. The women have to wear these pointy hats with these lace veils, and I'm not talking about nuns. I'm talking about, you know, just to go to fucking church,
right?
Or kiss some pervert's ring,
right? Right.
Oh, okay. I've been corrected by Robert in Australia, Reggie.
Yeah.
Banana hammocks was not the term he used. I don't recall using the term banana hammock. It doesn't sound familiar. It may be from a different part of Australia. Anyway, Speedos are generally referred to here as budgie smugglers. Yeah.
Budgie smugglers.
In my youth, in the 70s and 80s, I used to go to a harbor beach here in Sydney. It was a family beach and topless. Young moms with kids, topless. Older women, topless. Young woman, topless.
Right.
Nobody cared.
Right.
It was the beach. You put on a top to go to the shop, but on the beach it was okay. As for school, thanks to inheriting the British schooling system here in Australia, we all had to wear uniforms, and we had boys and girls schools from the high school on. That's about 12 years to 18 years old. Blue shirts with ties and gray pants. Boring as hell. And bullying was still a thing.
Right. Well, there, and, go ahead, Robin.
No, yeah, and the thing is, I've even seen outcries among the schools that have to wear uniforms.
Yeah.
There are now boys who are, and this may sound crazy, they're not even necessarily trans boys, but there are boys who are standing up for the girls and saying, by God, we want to wear skirts too, because we'd like a little breeze up there once in a while as well.
Right. Well, I hope
because if there's ever any pressure at all applied to these stupid patriarchal hang-ups, there's pushback at first, and then it all crumbles. I mean, it's kind of like what Gandhi said about movements for social justice. He said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you. Then you win.
Right. 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 And, you know, I just hope they don't make them start wearing uniforms, school uniforms, because, you know, they're hot, itchy, scratchy, and stiff, Robin.
I never had to deal with them, but I can imagine where they went. You know, the broadcloth dress shirts, you know, those heavy freaking skirts and woolen pants. Ugh. Yuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Megan has given us an answer. She says, yeah, I had the drape, too. It was a black piece of cloth that was draped across the chest, coming to a V on the cleavage, and it was the same for every girl. Boys had a tux top, and those girls were hardly showing anything. Those retouches made the pictures look weird, and they just let the boys' swim team pose in their Speedos. It's sexist and completely unacceptable in 2021, and I agree.
Yeah.
As to the Orthodox Jewish dress code, all of these religions have their own weirdnesses. Lee points out Orthodox Jewish women wear wigs because their own hair is too sexy. Yeah, it'll divert their husbands from their dedicated study of Torah. For Pete's sake.
Right. Well, I thought we were supposed to control our animal instincts and urges. Right, Robin?
Well, but the thing, it's not so much that... Well, yeah, I mean, this is about making boys control their animal instincts and urges, but the philosophical problem is that the focus is somehow on the fact that girls are the ones who are responsible for the animal impulses and urges of the pervy boys.
Well, they're not, right?
No, of course they're not.
They're not.
I mean, this is the high school equivalent of, well, how was she dressed?
Right. Whose business is it of that, of theirs or that? Right, Robin?
Right, exactly. Reggie, I'm going to wrap things up because I got a couple more things I want to do before the evening's out. But you hit another one out of the park this evening, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so very much, Robin. And didn't they alter their faces too, or blur them out? I think I saw that.
Well, in the news the news story, some of the faces were blurred out to protect their own anonymity.
Yeah.
So that they couldn't, so that they couldn't be used, so that they couldn't be used in cyberbullying.
Yeah. Even though they're already being cyber-bullied and attacked.
Right, the news organizations didn't want to make it worse. On the other hand, the one young woman was like, no, fuck it, I don't care. I'm going to call them out.
Right.
And you know what? I hope she goes on. I hope she goes on to do great things and grows up into the strong woman I suspect she will be. You know, Brother Deacon Asa said, see, if you was wearing your hijab, that old hillbilly wouldn't be checking your cans. Jesus Christ, Ace. God damn. No, I tried to get this program on the straight and, well, okay, on the narrow. But sometimes it just don't work. Sometimes the magic works, sometimes it doesn't. Reggie, have yourself a good afternoon and a good evening, my friend. Take care.
You too, Robin. And the biggest mistake that this school has ever made was they forgot that the internet exists. And once it's out there on the internet, it's out there on the internet forever.
Oh, I know. I know.
And they can go into talk shows and the news media has gotten a hold to this story too. And I'm sure
Darlene pointed out, it all went national, and then suddenly they realized they had a problem.
Yeah, they could be sued, like you said. But. Like you said, that one ninth grader is going to have 3 years left of this bullshit. How is she going to handle or take it? I wonder how she's going to handle it or take it.
Well, I mean, and Darlene asked that question earlier, you know, what about intentional infliction of emotional distress?
That too.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah.
She can have nightmares about this. You know what I mean? She can have nightmares about this, right?
Yeah, well, it's certainly going to make the rest of the school year a pain in the ass for her. For all of them.
Right. Yeah, true. Right. Yeah. Right, you know, true.
All right, Reggie, you have a good one, my friend. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right.
See you now.
I wish the school would admit their fault and say they were wrong.
Well, they've kind of half-heartedly done that, but they're only doing that because they're getting, you know, they're a national embarrassment now. So you take care.
They got caught, right?
Yeah.
They do too, Robin.
Bye now.
All right.
Our buddy Reggie, calling from Decatur, Georgia. Let's see, a couple other comments. Randy pointing out, you know, if there's a woman on the beach of a similar age to me and she's wearing a bikini, I get to look at her. Deal. I mean, if you're half naked in public, well, you can look, but don't touch. Well, don't stare. Don't stare. It's not, you know, don't stare. Don't stare. Nobody wants to be stared at. Them's fake boobs. Yeah. Don't stare. Matt in San Francisco, who got the show off to such a rousing start with SLW, suspiciously large woman. Matt said, those young high school girls should show up in handmade outfits for picture day next year. Damn! Hanging curveball right over the sweet part of the plate, and Matt just parked it in San Francisco Bay. Well done. Jeremy in Vermont says, Reggie and Robin, get with it. It's all about the original sin. You know, Eve, the snake, and that the chatty snake, and that damn fruit tree. Now everybody has to suffer. Yeah. All right. Good old Abrahamic religion. You betcha. And as promised earlier, this won the state championship for humorous speech in Arizona, and I've been just itching to hear what Suman said, and like I said, I wanted us to all share it together because we vicariously enjoy the triumphs and victories of the members of our community. So, Suman, take it away.
From India to Arizona in 2001. To study at Arizona State University. I had a plane change in London, and I was confused about where to catch my connecting flight. I asked a security officer which way to go. He said, just go through that line and Bob's your uncle. What? Who in the world is Bob?
I used to
My
be.
Brain raced. I don't have an uncle named Bob. Did my mother have a brother named Bob, of whom I was unaware? Certainly not, I hope. More importantly, if the officer was telling me that I could go through that line and magically I would have an uncle named Bob, maybe I don't want to go through that line. I don't know Bob. Bob might be a serial killer. With bubbling anxiety, I inched my way through that line, constantly looking over my shoulder. Thankfully, Bob never materialized. Fellow Toastmasters, welcome guests. Many English idioms baffled me when I first heard them. Those of you who originated in other countries may have had similar experiences. Today, I'll share some of mine. Eventually, I arrived at Arizona State University without the mysterious Uncle Bob. I went to register for classes. The receptionist asked me for my certificates. She said, hang tight while I check for skeletons in your closet. What? Why? Why would I have skeletons in my closet? Do people in this country store skeletons in their closets? Could my skeleton be Uncle Bob? Even if I had skeletons, I wouldn't pack them in my check-in luggage and bring them all the way over from India, would I? Meanwhile, she returned. She said, okay, you're good. I just need your John Hancock over here. Oh, what is up with this woman? First, she wants to check for skeletons in my closet, and now she wants me to bring John Hancock back to life? While I was thinking these horrible thoughts, she got frustrated. She said, signature, please. I signed and ran out of there as quickly as I possibly could, wondering what kind of voodoo university I got myself admitted into. During lunch break, a fellow student, John, said, man, I have a real hankering for a hamburger. But they're out. So I'll just bite the bullet and have a turkey sandwich. Bullets? In food? I have a good set of teeth, but they're not made for bullets. In fact, if I start eating bullets, it wouldn't be long before I end up as a skeleton in the closet, right next to Uncle Bob. So I ordered a vegetarian sandwich. It tasted quite good, especially without the special ingredient, bullets. The check arrived eventually. John took one look at it and said, let's go Dutch. Is he nuts? I just flew 6,000 miles to get here. Why does he want me to fly back to Europe? John looked at my confused face and just paid for the two of us. He's still my friend. That weekend, John called me. He said, hey, I have nosebleed seats to the football game. Do you want to go? Truth be told, I wanted to go to the game. But I figured any game that is going to cause my nose to bleed is probably not a game worth going to. John assured me that all my body parts would be safe. So I accompanied him to the game. This is where I saw the most amazing wonder of wonders. The players were holding the ball in their hands in a game that I will remind you is called football. I stood up and yelled, foul! Everybody stared at me. I stared right back. John pulled me aside and explained the rules of the game to me. it became very clear at that point that whoever named this game did not have a good understanding of the English language. It just wasn't the game of cricket. It has been 20 years since I landed here. These phrases have become a part of my daily lingo. Why, just today afternoon, in fact, I was really jonesing for some chicken noodles. I went to the restaurant. They were out of chicken noodles. Their special was spicy chicken wings. I was angry, but I didn't go postal. Instead, I jumped on the bandwagon and I ordered myself some spicy chicken wings. When the waitress came up to me and said, "What can we do to make your meal even better?" I said, "Just serve the spicy chicken wings with a wedge of lime and Bob's your uncle." Thank you, Mr. Pontus Chair.
Fantastic. Fan-freaking-tastic. You know what? Congratulations, Suman. You had to win going away. Fun language, isn't it? But I was sitting there listening to Suman, and I was thinking, great God Almighty, this program must be a constant delight. What's that hillbilly talking about? Thank you so much for sharing, Suman. That was a perfect ending to the program that has been more than a little bit, occasionally strange. So, again, thank you for sharing. And we're all so happy because you did a fantastic job. And you got a future. The Bob's your uncle and the... Those were wonderful moments. Just absolutely delightful. And I can only wonder, because, you know, it's all about idiom. I can only wonder what it would be like in reverse. I was getting my nails done the other day, and I said to the woman who had done such a fantastic job putting my butterfly on my right ring finger, it was amazing. I said, "You know, I know how busy you are, but I don't know how many other people would, but I'd sign up for language lessons. Are you kidding? It'd be awesome." And by the way, Suman, throwing in the line about that's just not cricket. Yeah. That was beautifully played. Oh, and hey, I hope, Jeremy, do you hear? Yeah, he's letting me know it's time for me to be off the air. All right, y'all. Have a great evening. Wasn't it, Darlene said that was hilarious. I agree wholeheartedly. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Jeremy, for jumping in this evening. I guess we'll be back up over $1,000 tomorrow, Wednesday, prayer meeting Wednesday. We'll get the brother deacons up and passing the plate or something. But 10:30 for tomorrow, unless things change. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best way to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. God, I love this time of year. It's still broad daylight outside. I'll go out and play after this is over. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act.
It means the world to Appalachia. Please, if you haven't already gotten your vaccine, get your vaccine as soon as you possibly can. And even after you're vaccinated, continue to take precautions. Wear your mask when you feel it's necessary. Certainly if you don't know if everybody around you is vaccinated. Please, wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer liberally. And if somebody comes towards you saying, "That Richard Marx is trying to get me killed," avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.